Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. So yesterday we have been speaking about the principle of empowerment. We began to speak about Mali Chaitanya and how he was manifesting himself through a whole disciplic succession of devotees, which is described as the Chaitanya tree. And today I wanted to take that a little further. Then there were also a few reactions. There was a question that that I had mentioned that in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Siddhanta is clearly defined. Is this the only reason why Srila Prabhupada translated Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita and not the Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat from Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur? Well, I cannot entirely understand Prabhupada's reasons for why he did what he did, but it is a fact that Prabhupada did mention that the Chaitanya Charitamrita was especially very important because the teachings of Lord Chaitanya are so clearly outlined there. And so in that way, Prabhupada said that for Chaitanya Charitamrita, let me see, where is this? Here it is. I had a quote here. Prabhupada said that our Chaitanya Charitamrita is unique literature. For Chaitanya Charitamrita, we are above any Acharya. There are four Acharyas, Ramanuja Acharya, Madhav Acharya, Vishnu Swami, but our Gaudiya Vaishnava, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's legacy Acharyas, that is unique. Anarpita Charim Chirat Karuniya Vatir Nakalo. Here the Supreme Personality of Godhead is personally teaching Acharya. Anarpita charim chirat karunaya vatirna kalo samarpayitum unantojvala rasam. The highest, topmost bliss, Madhurya. These dealings of Radha Krishna, Madhurya Ras, is the contribution of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All other Acharyas, they could not give up to this. All other Acharyas, they contributed up to friendship. No Vatsalya, neither Madhurya. This is the contribution of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. From a conversation in Bombay on January 9th, 1977. So here Prabhupada states how the CC especially is like giving us the full teachings of this philosophy. And more than any other literature. So yes, it is true that it is in that way the special literature in dealing with the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even more than the pastimes. So we wanted to read a little further about Mali Chaitanya, who is the gardener, and at the same time is also the tree, right, and the branches and all that, and how Lord Chaitanya is in this way distributing love of God. No. Since Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the original trunk, the taste of the fruits that grew on the branches and sub-branches surpassed the taste of nectar. The fruits ripened and became sweet and nectarian. The gardener, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, distributed them without asking any price. All the wealth in the three worlds cannot equal the value of one such nectarian fruit of devotional service. Not considering who asked for it and who did not, nor who was fit and who unfit to receive it, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu distributed the fruit of devotional service. So this especially is a very important verse. Not considering who asked for it and who did not, nor who was fit and who unfit to receive it, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu distributed the fruit of devotional service. It is Adi Lila, chapter 9, text 29. in the purport, Prabhupada said, this is the sum and substance of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. There is no distinction made between those who are fit and those who are not fit to hear or take part in the Sankirtan movement. It should therefore be preached without discrimination. The only purpose of the preachers of the Sankirtan movement must be to go on preaching without restriction. That is the way in which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced the Sankirtan movement to the world. And this is something we can remember when in our preaching, that simply we take the opportunity to glorify devotional service, to glorify the Supreme Lord, and then the result depends upon the Supreme Lord to see who will take up devotional service or not. It is difficult to judge who is fit and who is not fit. One may see that sometimes the most unfit persons take to Krishna consciousness, and someone who thought, well, this person will be favorable, will not be favorable. Any book distributor has that experience, and any preacher has that experience. So this verse sums it up. The transcendental gardener, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, distributed handful after handful of fruit in all directions. And when the poor, hungry people ate the fruit, the gardener smiled with great pleasure. Lord Chaitanya thus addressed the multifarious branches, multifarious varieties of branches and sub-branches of the tree of devotional service. Since the tree of devotional service is transcendental, every one of its parts can perform the action of all the others. Although a tree is supposed to be immovable, this tree nevertheless moves. All parts of this tree are spiritually cognizant, and thus they grow up as they spread all over the world. I am the only gardener. How many places can I go? How many fruits can I pick and distribute? So this is the verse that I wanted to speak on. The fact that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, I am the only gardener, how many places can I go? How many fruits can I pick and distribute? Is, in a way, a fallacious statement. I mean, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can pick unlimited fruits, distribute unlimited fruits. There is absolutely no limit at all to what he can do because he's the Supreme Lord, all-powerful. But nonetheless, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then said, it would certainly be a very laborious task to pick the fruits and distribute them alone. And still, I suspect that some would receive them and others would not. Again, a false statement. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can do it simply by his desire, wouldn't have to work at all. And he is all-pervading, so there's absolutely no restriction. Therefore, I order every man within this universe to accept this Krishna consciousness movement and distribute it everywhere, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. So, it's very interesting that here we see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu desired that others would do the work rather than he himself. So we see here that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, although he could easily do it himself, he could easily deliver an entire universe. In fact, we find a discussion in the Chaitanya Charitamrita between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Vasudev Datta. That Vasudev Datta is praying to the Lord that he will take the sinful reactions of everyone in the entire universe. And as such, he is ready to deliver all the conditioned souls within the universe. And he wants to take the sinful reactions. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, my dear Vasudev, that's really not required. Right? He said, there are so many universes, I mean, one more or less, you know, no one would even notice it. I could just do it like that. You really wouldn't have to suffer all the reactions for that. If I wanted to deliver a universe, I could just do it like that. No one would even if the whole universe would cease to exist, no one would even notice it. Right? There are so many, just like so many mustard seeds in a bag, you know, who would notice the difference if one mustard seed was missing? So like this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was making that statement, pointing out that there's really no limit to his power in delivering the all the living entities within the universe. But yet, he's engaging the devotees. Why? The reason is to empower the different living entities so that they become surcharged with transcendental energy. We see that one aspect of devotional service is the principle of empowerment. As a devotee is advancing in spiritual life, he begins to gradually develop all the good qualities of the demigods, it is said. Yes, yasti bhaktir bhagavatir akinchana sarvir gunais tata samasate sara. And what we speak of the qualities of the demigods, rather he begins to develop a number of the qualities of Krishna. So it is also described up to 48 of the 64 qualities of Krishna can be attained by the jiva, by the living entity. And then we find even another mention in the Nectar of Devotion that the Nichasiddha devotees of the Lord, from the spirit, who come from descent from the spiritual sky, have up to 55 of the 64 qualities of the Lord. So we see that the Lord is empowering his devotees as they are becoming more and more purified with qualities similar to his. We see descriptions of liberation that is given to the devotees, samipya, salokya, sarupya, sarsti, or they are getting the same, opulences as the Lord, they get the same type of body as the Lord, the same residence at the Lord, the association of the Lord. So like that, we see that everyone who takes to devotional service is becoming empowered in his own personal way, and also becomes then sparsamani. It is said, such a person becomes a touchstone, he is sparsamani. Whoever he comes in contact with, he can transform. So, the Lord empowers his devotee, and the devotees can also empower other living beings. We see in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's also the example of Narada Muni. And at that time, that term, sparsamani, is being spoken by his friend Parvata. Right? Because it is the story of Magrari the hunter that is being narrated here in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And at that time, there is the Magrari, it has totally changed by the influence of Narada. Previously half killing the animals, but once he'd become a devotee, jumping off the road left and right to avoid the ends, right? And then Parvata was saying, yes, you are truly a sparsamani, a transcendental touchstone. It is inconceivable how you have changed this personality. So the devotees of the Lord are being empowered by the Supreme Lord, and in turn, they can empower others. Now, there are different aspects to empowerment given, and I want to read a few things. But before, maybe mention a little more. We see the example of Sanatana Goswami. At one stage, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami to write a book on sadachar, the behavior of a Vaishnava. So Sanatana Goswami is saying, how can I possibly write such a difficult book? You please guide me and personally instruct me how to write this book, right, about the regulative principles of devotional service. And then he said, and also please manifest yourself within my heart. So this is very nice that that Sanatana Goswami here was pointing out that he needed the personal guidance of the Lord, and that he also needed the Lord to manifest himself within his heart. We see also that on another occasion, when Sanatana Goswami had received all the instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about devotional service in general, that again, Sanatana Goswami was praying to the Lord to please let these instructions be manifest in him. So here we see a few points. We see that empowerment is available in a very practical way, as well as apparently in a mystical way. And it seems to be there in these both ways. In the practical way, by following the instructions that are available in the scriptures, that are revealed to us by the acharyas. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu specifically taught these instructions. Like Srila Prabhupada is stating also, he says that there are five main subjects in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is on a lecture that Prabhupada gave on the appearance day of Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. He said, so today is the appearance day of Sri Kaviraj Goswami, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Therefore, we're discussing this evening teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which is the summary study of Chaitanya Charitamrita. The most important chapters in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, namely, his teachings to Rupa Goswami, his teachings to Sanatan Goswami, his talks with Prakasananda Saraswati, his talks with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and his talks with Ramananda Roy, these five subject matters are delineated in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya specifically. So the most important chapter of Chaitanya's teachings was to Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami. Teachings of Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami and Ramananda Goswami, Ramananda Roy. So they are meant for devotees who are on the second stage. And then Prabhupada begins to explain a little bit about first stage, second stage, third stage. But the point was that he made this this very, very, he stressed which sections of the Chaitanya Charitamrita were very important. So especially, he went for the portions which dealt with instructions. So here we're seeing that the instructions can actually empower a devotee and are very important. And we should, in other words, there we can take our spiritual strength. So this is one important aspect about this empowerment. Another important aspect is then the special mercy of a devotee that totally can just change us. Just by the association of a devotee, we can immediately become transformed. And a third point is that the question is, what is this empowerment anyway? We understand that the nature of such empowerment is that some of the transcendental qualities of Krishna are manifesting, and that a devotee becomes more and more aware of Krishna. If we look really at what is the purpose of Krishna consciousness, then the purpose of Krishna consciousness is to have a direct experience of Krishna, stronger and deeper and deeper and deeper. And that as one becomes more purified, one becomes more eligible. So it is said that as the birds fly in the sky as far as their capacity allows, so do the learned devotees describe the Lord as far as their realization allows. This is a verse from Bhagavatam, and Krishna's Kaviraj also reiterates the same point in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So we also have definitions given to us of different types of devotees, the Kanista Adhikari, Madhyam Adhikari, Uttam Adhikari. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita it says, Sradavan Janahai Bhakti Adhikari, Uttam Madhyam Kanista Shradu Anusari. A faithful devotee is a truly eligible candidate for the loving service of the Lord. According to one's faith, one is classified as a topmost devotee, an intermediate devotee, or an inferior devotee. So faith is directly related to adhikar. The adhikar means authorization. So we have the Kanista Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari, Uttama Adhikari, and or the neophyte, the intermediate, and topmost devotee. And they all have a different authorization. Authorization to enter into understanding about the Supreme Lord and into perceiving the Supreme Lord. So true empowerment means that we are able to connect with the Supreme Lord. Yes. So a devotee can immediately empower others simply by engaging a person in devotional service. We empower him because immediately he becomes connected to the Supreme Lord. This is the empowering nature. Every devotee, therefore, who can give devotional service to others has the power to empower, to create the connection with the Supreme Lord. Ninth chapter, Adilila. So in the Antya Lila, there's a description of Nakula Brahmachari, who became empowered by the Supreme Lord. In Ambuya Mulaka, there was a person named Nakula Brahmachari, who was a perfectly pure devotee, greatly advanced in devotional service. Desiring to deliver all the people of Bengal, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu entered the heart of Nakula Brahmachari. Nakula Brahmachari became exactly like a man haunted by a ghost. Thus, he sometimes laughed, sometimes cried, sometimes danced, and sometimes chanted like a madman. He continuously exhibited bodily transformations of transcendental love. Thus, he cried, trembled, became stunned, perspired, danced in love of Godhead, and made sounds like those of a cloud. His body shone with the same luster as that of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he showed the same absorption and ecstatic love of Godhead. People came from all provinces of Bengal to see the symptoms. He advised whomever he met to chant the holy names Hare Krishna. Thus, upon seeing him, people were overwhelmed with love of Godhead. When Sivananda Sen heard that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had entered the body of Nakula Brahmachari, he went there with doubts in his mind. We should understand that Sivananda Sen was a great and pure devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So for Sivananda Sen, it was not possible to worship anyone else but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Right? Therefore, when Sivananda Sen saw that someone else was being worshipped as getting as much respect practically as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sivananda Sen couldn't handle it. It was too much for him to see, like, you know, that what's going on? They're worshipping this person instead of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Right? How can it be? And how do we know anyway that he is a representative of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? So we see this also sometimes in the followers of great devotees. We saw it like in the followers of some followers of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. It was difficult for them to accept that after Srila Bhaktisiddhanta there was anybody else. They couldn't accept very well that Prabhupada was such a great acharya. That was difficult. And we see it after Prabhupada. We see that people also can sometimes not recognize anybody else. So here we see this this tendency that only Prabhupada, we even have a whole philosophy like that. But we should understand that the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is being carried forward from person to person. Just like Prabhupada himself gave this lecture in Bombay in 1936 on the Vyasa Puja of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, where he explains that Guru is one, he is saying, that the Acharya is the embodiment of Guru Tattva. And he is, in other words, he's carrying that same transcendental mercy that has been carried by others. He's a receptacle of that mercy and he's handing it out. So that is the postman idea, right? That the spiritual master is the postman. So we find in the Adi Lila 145 a description how it is Krishna who is delivering the disciple, not Guru. So this is a very important point, which is often misunderstood. Like we see that for many misunderstand this point. Those who are adhering to Ritvik philosophy, they don't understand this point. Those who are adhering to the point, who are just stressing this point that the qualification of Guru, what is the qualification of Guru? If he doesn't have prema, how can he give it to others? If he is not like on the topmost, most intimate level of associates of the Lord, how can he possibly deliver anyone from this world? But that's not understanding the principle of that it's Krishna who delivers the disciple through the Guru. So the verse is Guru Krishna Rupa Haya Shastra Praman Guru Rupa Krishna Kripa Karena Bhakta Gan. According to the deliberate opinion of all revealed scriptures, the spiritual master is none different from Krishna. Lord Krishna, in the form of the spiritual master, delivers his devotees. So through the spiritual master, it is Lord Krishna who delivers the devotee. It is the same principle of samsara dhavanadali daloka, the cloud that is raining down the mercy. The spiritual master is that cloud who is extinguishing the burning fire of material life, samsara. But he gets his mercy from the ocean of mercy, which is the Supreme Lord. And finally, dharmam tu saksat bhagavat pranitam, that religious principles are established by the Supreme Lord. And only those religious principles that are very carefully presented, non-different from what the Lord originally presented, right? Only they have the potency to act. Only there is the spiritual power. So there is plenty of proof to point out that it is the spiritual master who is only acting on behalf of Krishna. So therefore one can understand that I would say every devotee, from the day that we come to the Sankirtan movement, we are getting a little receptacle, a little container, right, by which we can distribute mercy. Right? And over the years, that container may grow. Right? So some have beautiful containers, very large, beautiful pots, nicely polished, studded with many jewels. Like, for example, some devotees had very intimate association with Prabhupada. And in that period, all these moments of association are like jewels, right? Are like very valuable things. They have been polished, and they received a very big container by the mercy of Prabhupada. And therefore, they can hand out so much mercy. Others of us, when we came, we just got a tiny little, how do you call these things you use in sewing? You put on top of your finger? A thimble, right, a thimble. A little thimble, you know, like scoop up a little mercy and hand out a few drops, right? For most of us, it may be just that. But with time, as one engages in devotional service, also one's receptacle, one's cup or pot or whatever is growing, and one can give out more mercy. So in this way, there may be different spiritual masters who may have a different capacity to give out mercy. There's no doubt about it. Like Prabhupada was capable of doing more than just any ordinary spiritual master. But still, anyone who gives out the mercy as it comes in disciplic succession, that will act.
Yeah.
And therefore, in this verse, C.C. Adi Lila 145, is one of the strong philosophical arguments against Ritvik philosophy or against this. The spiritual master can only be Uttama Adhikari. He could also be a Madhyama Adhikari, because still Krishna could act through him as long as he is faithful to in representing the teachings of the Supreme Lord. They will act in itself, because ultimately it is only the message of the Lord that can deliver anyone from this material world. At the time, Sivananda Sen was not just amazed. Sivananda Sen came there to that place and found that people were very excited about one person that he never heard of, some brahmachari, some Nakula brahmachari, and everyone was just worshipping him. So Sivananda had great doubts in his heart that this was true. But on the other hand, Sivananda was also thinking that it might be true, because after all, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can do anything and everything, so it's not beyond the Supreme Lord to do such a thing, right? So we cannot disregard it altogether. But he was in doubt in this way. So, yeah, we're going to read that. Yeah, it's just like, so Lord Chaitanya, at the end of that pastime with Vasudev, said that he would indeed deliver, that it was already taken care of, simply. So we find twice a mention in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about delivering all the living beings in the universe. One is in this pastime with Vasudev Datta, and the other one is in connection with Haridas Thakur. And first with Vasudev Datta, if you read that pastime and at the end, then it looks really like Lord Chaitanya there and then sent all the living entities back to the spiritual world and empty out the universe. But it seems that within the universe there are two categories of jivas, at least here's a division made. One category is known as the sukshma jiva, and the other jiva has become... sukshma means a jiva that is totally inactive. He is just existing in a subtle condition. It is said that the living entities are sarvaga. They are all-pervading in the universe. They even exist in between the atoms. And there we find sukshma jivas. These living entities are then in the state of total unconsciousness. Others again are having another presentation on this point. They say that when we speak of such non-active jivas, sukshma jivas, that there is a letter of Prabhupada which seems to indicate that the atoms itself, right, are the jivas and that are inactive, and that matter doesn't actually even exist in that sense. Anyway, there's always been a big debate on that point. That's one of the gray areas in our philosophy. I wouldn't run with that. I would think that, generally speaking, we get references that dead matter does exist, and that the sukshma jivas exist between the atoms. So it said when all the living entities were delivered, after Vasudev was brought back to, when he wanted to take the karma, that then after that, the sukshma jivas again filled up the universe. So that puts us into the sukshma jiva category. That 500 years ago, we would have been just inactive sukshma jivas who have been now, who were activated then. Right? And before that, now there are several other mentions. Then we go to Haridas Thakur. When we read the pastime of Haridas Thakur, then we get the impression that this delivery is taking place now, that the Sankirtan movement is doing it now, right? And that the very preaching that is going on is actually that deliverance of the entire universe and sending everyone back. So that also has been debated, whether it is like going on now or whether it has already happened. There are two references in these past times. One is that at the time of Lord Ramachandra, all the residents of Ayodhya were taken back to the spiritual world, and then again Ayodhya was filled up with other living entities. And the same in Lord Krishna's past times also. He took back many living entities and again filled up the universe also. So it is mentioned. So these things are going on and are a little bit inconceivable, but they are mentioned. If there's any further... Would you like to say something more on that, Tatuja? No, is that right? I mean, I don't know if I explained it very well. Anyway, back to Nakula Brahmachari. So Nakula Brahmachari was ecstatically experiencing love of God, and people were taking it that he had been empowered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had entered the body of Nakula Brahmachari. Sivananda Sen was doubting it. Desiring to test the authenticity of Nakula Brahmachari, he stayed outside, thinking as follows: if Nakula Brahmachari personally calls me and knows my worshipable mantra, then I shall understand that he's inspired by the presence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Thinking in this way, he stayed some distance apart. There was a large crowd of people, some coming and some going. Indeed, some people in that great crowd could not even see Nakula Brahmachari. In his inspired state, Nakula Brahmachari said, "Sivananda Sen is staying some distance away. Two or four of you, go call him." Thus people began running here and there, calling in all directions, "Sivananda, whoever is Sivananda, please come. Nakula Brahmachari is calling you." Hearing these calls, Sivananda Sen quickly went there, offered obeisances to Nakula Brahmachari, and sat down near him. Nakula Brahmachari said, "I know that you are doubtful. Now please hear this evidence with great attention. You are chanting the Gaura Gopal mantra composed of four syllables. Now please give up the doubts that have resided within you." Sivananda Sen thereupon developed full confidence in his mind that Nakula Brahmachari was filled with the presence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sivananda Sen then offered him respect and devotional service. So we see then that he accepted it. So the worshipable mantra was the Gaura Gopal mantra. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains the Gaura Gopal mantra in his Amrita Pravaha Bhasya. Worshippers of Sri Gaura Sundar accept the four syllables Go, Ra, Ang, Ga as the Gaura Gopal mantra. But pure worshippers of Radha and Krishna accept the four syllables Ra, Da, Krish, Na as the Gaura Gopal mantra. However, Vaishnavas, considering Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu non-different from Radha Krishna, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna and Anya, therefore, one who chants the mantra Gauranga and one who chants the names of Radha and Krishna are on the same level. Anyway, so it's very... one might be surprised, in a way, you know, that that the worshipable mantra was Gauranga and not Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Right? So, obviously, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was chanting the Maha Mantra, and obviously his followers were also chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And obviously, Sivananda Sen, being one of the intimate followers of the Lord, was also chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Still, it is said that the worshipable mantra of Sivananda Sen is Gauranga. So, we take it that that was not necessarily the main mantra he was chanting, but that he was, that it meant that for him, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gauranga, was his Ishtadev, his worshipable deity. To me, that is a very significant point, and I feel that in our entire movement, that is to be understood. Right? Even like here in Vrindavan, Prabhupada installed Krishna and Balaram as the central deities, and different reasons have been mentioned for that. You know, one reason was that this is Raman Reti, the place of Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys, and the Prabhupada might have done it for that reason. Another reason given is because Prabhupada wrote two bhajans, and in one of these bhajans that are given in the Vaishnav songbook, there is a section which describes that I'm longing for that day when I will be frolicking in the fields again with you, right? So it is taken, this is a cowherd boy mood. Prabhupada must have been in a cowherd boy mood, some have said, others have argued that. Prabhupada himself said that when devotees were speculating about this, he said, this you do not require. So we keep it like that, as far as I'm concerned. We should not speculate on this. But the point is that Prabhupada writes that he installed Krishna and Balaram because they're non-different from Gornitai. That is what he wrote. He wrote that Krishna and Balaram were the main deities because they're non-different from Gornitai. And it is only through the worship of Gornitai only that we can enter into Vrindavan. So that's why they became the principal deities here in Krishna Balaram Mandir. So Prabhupada very much was in this same spirit that Gauranga was the worshipable deity. Even here in Vrindavan, he stressed that point. And for our whole movement and all of our devotional service has to be taken in that context of Gauranga, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that has a lot of consequences. That means Sankirtan. That means preaching, that means the spirit of Lord Chaitanya. That means Ghosti Anandi, not Bhajan Anandi. And we see all that in Prabhupada's mood. So we can see, again, how much Prabhupada is imbibing the spirit of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I'll read a little more about this empowerment thing. Shivananda Sen thereupon developed full consciousness in his mind that Nakula Brahmachari was filled with the presence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sivananda Sen then offered him respect and devotional service. In this way, one should understand the inconceivable potencies of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it is described there are three ways that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu manifests himself. One is Saksat, that means personal, directly present. The other one is Avesh, he empowers some living being. Or the third one is avirbhav. He just appears somewhere, like in the house of Mother Sachi. When she cooks, he sometimes eats everything. Mother Sachi was cooking and was ready and made a nice offering tray, offered it all to the Lord, and then the Lord ate everything. So when she came, she saw the bowls were all empty. She thought, maybe I didn't fill them up. And she went to the kitchen to check, and the pots were still full. And she said, yes, and I must have not filled them up. But she thought, but I remember doing it. And then she offered everything again. And the same thing happened a few times. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was actually coming there and eating everything. And on one occasion, he sent a message from Puri to his mother. And in that message, he sent a message how much he had appreciated the particular preparations that she had offered on a special festival day, how nice they were, just to let her know that he really came to eat. So that is the avirbhav appearance of the Lord. So like that, Lord Chaitanya may, besides appearing directly, also sometimes appear in a form of avirbhav, just manifest in a particular place, or he is coming in avesha rupa, manifesting himself through the devotees. So especially that latter part is what I find most interesting. And the whole idea, going back to the beginning of this this session, talking about Mali Chaitanya, who said he could not distribute the fruits alone, but wanted others to distribute. It means that he empowered others and in turn wanted others to, again, empower others. So this is the very much there in Prabhupada's preaching, and it's so nice. Like one example is we can see how Prabhupada, during the war, was struggling with his Back to Godhead magazine. To get paper for it was so difficult. He had to just beg and struggle and struggle, and finally, after sitting in so many offices, he got some reserves, government reserves, sanctioned, and he got paper. And he could print the Back to Godhead. And it was very difficult to convince people. So how much did Prabhupada struggle to just publish Back to Godhead? It's inconceivable. How much did he struggle to distribute it? He, in the heat of the Delhi summer, while distributing BTG's, Prabhupada fainted. Okay? So how much of a struggle was it? And then we see that as soon as he starts, in the 60s, he starts the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And one of the first things he does is he makes Hayagriva and Rai Ram in charge of Back to Godhead. And we see that Hayagriva had a little bit of a hard time to completely conform himself to the, to just Vaishnav literature or just philosophy as Prabhupada gave it. He was very attached to Blake. And then he started like publish poetry of Blake in Back to Godhead and all that. And so why did Prabhupada do it? Why did he not himself take full charge of it? Because if you look at these early Back to Godhead writings of 1944, very powerful, very direct and potent, and like a real deep purport to whatever's going on in the world. He says, the other side of the frenzy of hate is the frenzy of love, right? And he points out that Nazi Germany, on the one hand, has the frenzy of hate, but on the other hand, have the frenzy of love for like their das Vaterland, you know, their and all that, right? So, it's a very nice article. And there's another nice article about someone who congratulated, Bernard Shaw congratulated Gandhi on his birthday and could only wish that Gandhi could deduct 35 years of his age, right? And it was a birthday wish. And Prabhupada made a whole article based on that, said, yes, a very nice idea. But unfortunately, everyone in this world has that same desire, right? But we are here temporary, etc. So, the early Back to Godheads are so potent. And then we see that Hayagriva, it went down to another level. Right? But still, Prabhupada gave it to them. Why? Right? Why? Just out of this concept of empowerment, out of this concept of like, giving them the responsibility and then giving some guidance along with it in order to bring them up and in this way to increase the preaching. And this is the whole principle of empowerment. Our movement has, after Prabhupada, not really had the same mood of empowerment. In many respects, it was more stagnating. In many respects, it has been more stifling. So many people felt stifled over the years. In recent times, the ladies have spoken up that they felt stifled, that they felt that so many opportunities were denied, etc. And so many others have felt like that, right? So many have felt like, well, when is he going to move on? When it's going to be my turn, you know, like to be able to take some responsibility. Prabhupada would just send one man to a city, go and open it, open a temple, right? All over the world, one man. little Shivananda Brahmachari was sent at 19 years old, you know, all alone, from London, and went to Holland, Germany, and places like that, and was the first one to establish Krishna consciousness there. And actually, especially in Germany, it was very successful. He was in Holland, couldn't find a place to stay, unfortunately. So you met him in Heidelberg. What happened? Yeah, the seed was planted by Sivananda. Sidananda. Right? Yes, so Sivananda was like, I didn't meet him in those days. I only met him later. But they said that Sivananda was, Bhakti Bhushan Maharaj told me, that Sivananda was so enthusiastic and so warm and personal that he captured everyone. Right? He definitely had a special energy, a special Shakti. Huh? Did you also notice that? He was nice, huh? And Prabhupada liked him because in Amsterdam he gave an interview to the papers, and there he mentioned Prabhupada's name and the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and Prabhupada knew that therefore he would be successful. He wrote him a letter back to that effect, just that he had that faith in the spiritual master and quoted his name for that. He was blessed. Nowadays we may have been trained to do that, but Sivananda had not been trained and did that all very spontaneous on his own. You know, nowadays we've been drilled and we know if you don't write on top, you know, founder Acharya, etc., if you like, that would be like something very serious. But Sivananda did that on his own, and because he took that initiative and in that way showed the right mood and faith, Prabhupada knew that he would be successful. So, Prabhupada empowered people like that, gave them so much responsibility, let them take initiatives. Whereas we have sometimes afterwards felt that, you know, in ISKCON we weren't allowed to do anything, right? There was like a heavy controlling management, and you weren't allowed to do this, not left, not right, not nothing. So this is true, that this is was some immaturity in our understanding. And that a more mature understanding of Krishna consciousness is to empower people by giving responsibility. Responsibility is a very, very powerful factor. Right? Because responsibility in devotional service is what lifts us above the mind and the senses. We have seen many, many times that those who could not become fixed in a responsibility in devotional service, they didn't last. They kind of withered. But those who took a service and could just somehow or other take that service and carry on with it, yes, they were forced to forget about material desires, to forget about the mind, to forget about anything else, because the responsibility, well, what to do? You have to be there at a certain time. It has to be done. If it's not done, it will hold up so many others. Right? If one has a responsibility, we are like one little wheel in the machine, and if that one little wheel is not functioning, then everything else goes haywire. And in this way, many people will get upset. So there's so much pressure to somehow or other live up to this responsibility. So this is a very important key to empowerment: responsibility, and therefore we must give responsibility. Not throw responsibility. Yeah, that's not empowerment. Empowerment means that we give responsibility, but along with it, we also give the guidance and the training and the support. Throwing responsibility just means like, okay, here it is. You know, like, I'm in charge, and I know the guy can't do it, but anyway, he wants so much. Okay, here it is. Bang, walk away. Come back after a little while and say, he made a total mess of it. I knew he wasn't qualified, right? And then take it back, you know. That we've also seen throwing responsibility at people to only reconfirm that there's no one else who can do it but us. Okay? But the real mood in empowering people is when we see that behind us someone's coming up who can do what we are doing, then we should let him do. That is one principle of empowerment. You say, yeah, well, okay, very nice. Someone's coming up behind me. We let him do. And then what will I do? You know, then I'm out of a job. Right? I mean, that doesn't make sense at all. Like, you know, look, I mean, we all need something. So no, no, then our job is to become a teacher. And if we are out of doing things, then we become teachers. Like we see some dynamics. And we see that in the beginning, in devotional service, we are, the first service we are given is normally, is being in charge of something, you know, wash the deity plates, clean this floor, clean the temple, things like that. Be in charge of things, right? But then, with the years, as one is good in doing things, there's a group of people, let's say they're responsible for cleaning the temple. Well, if there's one amongst them who's cleaning the temple really nice, is very good in cleaning the temple, then after some time, one might think, well, make this person in charge of cleaning the temple. Right, make him in charge of all the temple cleaners because he's good. He can teach others how to do it. He can show others. No, should be like this. Well, but that's very difficult because as soon as one becomes then in charge of that, then one gets the dynamics of dealing with people instead of things, which is very hard because people don't want to be told how to do things and how to do it different from what they do, even if it's wrong. I also had many experiences like that over the years. Somehow or other, one of the first services I wound up in was helping in the restaurant, and then the manager left here in Vrindavan, and then I was the restaurant manager. In no time, I was the restaurant manager. And then, it had its good sides. It had its good sides. Nice prasadam. That was not bad. Anyway, so, it was very difficult to deal with people because there was one devotee, Italian devotee. He was serving, and we were serving at the plate in those days from little containers. We were serving at the plate, and he had the old splooch method, you know, like throw the sabji splooch on the plate. And but when I mentioned someone, something, you know, like he went practically on strike. I was interfering with his bhakti, right? To say that he couldn't, like, just throw it on the plate and all things like that. Then I had a helper in the kitchen who was a hired man, a Bengali, who was cooking chapatis. And one day there were many, many people coming in the restaurant, and the kitchen was downstairs. The restaurant was up in those days. And I called down, chapatis, and when he cooked chapatis, plenty of them, and I distributed the chapatis, and the guests were gone, and I came down to the kitchen, and he was still cooking chapatis like a machine, you know. So I told him, no, enough chapatis, enough, stop. But he wouldn't stop, right? He wouldn't stop. So I tried everything, and finally, at the end of it all, I grabbed his arm, you know, to stop him from rolling, because he was rolling these chapatis, and it stopped him. And then he just turned into a monster who attacked me with the dough roller. So, and he screamed, and 30, 40 people came, and I had attacked him, you know, and he had to defend his life from me. I had beaten him. I had only grabbed his arm. Anyway, so I learned many things then about being in charge. And it went on like that over the years. I learned more and more. Still learning. The thing I've learned now is avoid being in charge. If you can. But the point that I'm trying to make is that in the beginning we may be just responsible for things. Then with time, we may be responsible for people who are doing things. Ultimately, it may even grow to a point where we become more and more just in charge of people and not at all of the things anymore. And we see that the topmost leadership is the spiritual leadership who just look after the people, right? Who look after the consciousness of the people. So in this way we see how the empowerment is there's a dynamics in our movement where one becomes empowered from things to people with things and finally to people. And these dynamics must be encouraged in our movement. Maybe the Zonal Acharya era, which was pointing everything at one person, was stifled that development where people, where all the devotees would go through these dynamics of not just looking after things, but beginning to look after people. Like what our movement is lacking now is senior men who are really taking responsibility for the spiritual life of others. We have so many senior men in our movement, but who is taking really care of other devotees and of their spiritual life? And this is really the requirement in the movement. And in this way, everyone is always having a new challenge ahead of him. Everyone is always having to grow by doing something that he has never done before. That's difficult, right? The person who's never taken the responsibility for doing so many things, boy, is he getting a dose of purification by taking that responsibility and getting all these reactions, etc., from so many people. And the person who has to take responsibility for other spiritual life and has to actually inspire and teach, he really becomes aware of how he'd better become advanced, right? And through seniority, if seniority does not come along with this taking responsibility for the spiritual life of others, then where is the pressure to become advanced? Right? Where is the pressure to actually give up the subtle material contamination? In the Gundicha Marjana chapter here in the CC, as the purport of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, where he describes all the different anarthas and he describes how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cleansed the temple twice. One time to take out the gross things. So the gross cleansing is simple, is just giving up sinful activities. That's easy. That's four regulative principles. It's clear, you know. You know when you're doing it and when you're not doing it. It's totally clearly defined. It's easy, you know, in one sense. Although it may be difficult to get ourselves to the point of following four regulative principles, it's very easy to identify the objective. But when we come to the secondary cleansing of the heart, which was to take out the more subtle anarthas in the heart, hankering for worship or prestige, profit, distinction, adoration, prestige, all these things, these more subtle anarthas within the heart, they're more difficult to trace. I mean, just when we thought we're acting really pure, then the contamination creeps in again. And like that, it is difficult. But if one is taking responsibility for others, then there is more of an impetus to go through this. So I feel personally that this principle of empowerment, which is very much part of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, it's at the core of Sankirtan. Sankirtan actually means empowering people. What are we supposed to do in Sankirtan? We're supposed to engage him in devotional service. Anyone, right? We're supposed to give him some responsibility in devotional service. So I think that in our movement, we have not sufficiently realized this principle, and that is one of the reasons why we are not fully happy about the form of ISKCON today. And I think this empowerment principle would help and add so much new life to our movement. Well, okay, that's an opinion, and on that I'd like to invite your responses and what you feel about all that. And that's anyone now. Yes. Yes, that is in particular Lord Krishna, that is true. Krishna, Sri Krishna, Chaitanya, Radha Krishna, Narayana, that we know. But Prabhupada specifically installed Gaur Nitai because Gaur Nitai are in the mission of distributing love of God. In the when Gaur Nitai are together, right, then particularly the preaching of the Sankirtan mission is predominant. So without the Sankirtan mission, Narottam Das Thakur points out, one cannot understand Radha and Krishna. By entering into the pastimes and into the teachings which are distributed, Sankirtan Yajna by Gaur Nitai, one can dive into that ocean of these, of that nectar. And as one comes up from that ocean, one emerges in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So therefore, yes, Radha and Krishna are there, but not on the central altar. But they're there, without a doubt. Maybe, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I didn't mean it to be management service at all. I meant it in all types of service, although maybe I gave an example of management, but I meant any type, not management. Yeah, yeah, responsibility. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Now I understand what you mean. You see, as you take it, you take what I said, and that's more my fault in the way I express myself than yours. You take it very much in a managerial, in an organizational, in a controlling context. Maybe because my examples from my own life were like that, but I didn't mean it like that at all. I meant that somewhere along the line, we may take charge of the service of the Lord. Like, and if one can take charge of the service of more than one, that is good. Now, whether some controlling propensity comes in there, that may be. And in that case, it's not necessarily so that the one who is in a position of authority is more advanced than the simple devotee who does a very simple, humble service. But taking responsibility for increasing devotional service, that is the that is ultimately where it has to go. So just the idea of empowerment to just take it from the managerial angle doesn't satisfy me. I think we should expand it to the level of seeing that we should take responsibility for expanding Krishna consciousness, expanding devotional service beyond our own devotional service. And ultimately that should come from being through a managerial position after one gradually loses his ambition, or being a leader in another way. A bhakta leader, you know, would not be a manager, but would very much be a leader. A Sankirtan leader could be either a manager or more an inspiring type of person. But he takes responsibility for the service of others with the idea to enthuse devotees and to increase the mercy. So really, the real spirit is to, through others, increase the Sankirtan. I mean, that's more where I was going, I guess. Oh, yes. Yeah, he said like that. Yeah. But that responsibility doesn't just have to be managerial, that's for sure. Although maybe my example was too much in that direction. But is my observation, that's a question I have to you, is my observation correct that this is that these dynamics maybe may have not been sufficiently implemented, that we haven't sufficiently absorbed this mood of empowering, and that maybe as individuals we are not empowering in general, that we could empower others more, that on a collective scale we could be more in an empowering mood? Yeah, so I think this message should go out to the society kind of at large. It's like, I think it's a point to make at this point, at this time. That's why I'm making it. It's a statement to make again and again to kind of increase the awareness of the need for empowerment. I feel it's like a essential element in rejuvenating ISKCON. But I'd like to hear some feedback, because others may feel, well, you know, like, marriage, it's not, it's a little over the top. But and then, if temple presidency becomes like, if we base it more on spiritual leadership, then it could maybe revive, you know, like where a temple president becomes more a spiritual leader and begins to identify himself more as a spiritual leader rather than an administrator, but really becomes a spiritual leader, then he becomes inspiring again, and then he becomes more the hub of things. But if a temple president is like, you know, a guy who's just pushing pens around, signing checks, but for the rest, you know, what does he know, right? I mean, kind of mood towards him. And if he's really, he comes to Mongolartic once a week, and, you know, you generally see him in the office, not in the temple, yeah, then... So to separate those two things, administration and spiritual leadership, was never Prabhupada's idea. Prabhupada's model of a temple president was very much a spiritual father-like person who was also doing administration. But there was a lot of emphasis about his spiritual leadership quality. But over the years, that changed. He just became a good administrator, but not a spiritual leader, and therefore the respect and everything went down and down and down. And it's not just a matter of how many times one attends Mongolartic, but spiritual leader means with realization, with depth, understanding, and you know, very mature devotee with qualities, and you know, with some of the 26 qualities of a devotee like that, then we're talking about a kind of temple president everyone would want to have and would want to listen to. And wherever you have those, things are flourishing. More transcendental. More transcendental. You may have to be like more a Yudhisthira-like Satriya, or a transcendental personality. Anyway, I have to stop, I guess, over time. Thank you very much.